by the Maasai warriors with their lion spears. And it took us a while to meet everybody's eyes and see that we all were good people. And we squatted down in a circle and looked at each other and said, Aum, Professor Campbell, is the sound that the universe makes when it is pleased with itself. So he used storytelling to diffuse what otherwise could have been a scholarly competition, which wouldn't have been so nice.
You mentioned about the group field a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where could I read more about that? Because there's been more than a few times when I stare at the back of a student's head, and there are lots of students in the classroom, but that student turns around and looks at me.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always wondered, is that group field directed in a certain...
Rupert, good question. Rupert has a wonderful little book that he wrote about Rupert Sheldrake. Rupert Sheldrake, the discoverer or the author of the morphogenetic field theory. He's an Englishman. I'll tell you a funny story about him in just a minute. But Rupert wrote a book called 50 Experiments That Could Change the... Oh, I'm sorry. 7 Experiments That Could Change the World for under $50 each. And one of those experiments involves the experience of being stared at, how it's a universal thing, and how you can do it through several layers of plate glass windows. People don't even, you know, have a clue that you're staring at them, and all of a sudden they'll turn around and look at you like that. The experience of being stared at. It's one of those things that proves the field theory. Another one is how dogs are always there by the doorway or the gate when you come home, even if you come home in an unaccustomed way. So he has these wonderful, wonderful experiments. He's a dear man. And maybe I should tell the Rupert Sheldrake story so you'll know who he is. This was years ago, and Rupert and I had just ingested a visionary vegetable. I won't tell you which one it was. I was telling him about another occasion in which we were talking about his theory, sitting on our back porch and in the country, and I told him the following story. One time, I was in a visionary state, and I was sitting out in my backyard, and I heard the little tree frogs called the spring peepers. And they're really quite wonderful in the spring up there. And I thought, and I heard them go, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. So I said to Rupert, now, Rupert, you're the master of the morphogenetic field. Could it be that the frogs received the same inspiration that Ludwig von Beethoven did, but they didn't know how to write? And I just happened to be there hearing it. Or could it be that these things are going through the universe all at the same time, and Beethoven just heard the same things the frogs did and did it? Did I superimpose my pattern of thought on the frogs? And he said, let me see now. It could be that when your morphogenetic field, with its knowledge of Beethoven, entered the little frog's morphogenetic field, he's English, entered the little frog's morphogenetic field, they just thought they would play da-da-da-da. Yes?
I have some question about, and maybe you have an opinion that you can offer, about the training of people in this particular modality. The field is rife with all kinds of therapies, and anybody can almost set up a shingle that they have taken a program in this. And so I'm wondering if there's any standardization or under which professional discipline would you think this would be most appropriately done?
A very good question, sir. Across the entire country, and I think over most of the world, there are no standards of practice for biofeedback and neurofeedback. But it's probably with fairly good reason. Number one, it's hard to do damage. You can do it, but you can't do damage like people can do with prescription pads. Nowhere near. And there's nothing toxic that stays in the system. When we offer our training programs, there is a certification. I have two certifications. The American Institute of Biofeedback Technologies, I'm a kind of a master teacher for them. And then the BCIA, the Biofeedback Certification of Institute of America, is a nationally certifying organization. And they have standards, and you have to take a test. I had to take a test to get, I'm board certified senior teacher with them as well. But it is thought that it can be practiced by anybody with a health or a mental health license to practice in their state, because you do have to touch people. You are affecting people. You are hearing their intimate stories and secrets. So when we do a training program, I have trained medical doctors, psychologists, nurses, nurse practitioners, mental health counselors, psychiatric social workers. Victor, what else? What did I miss?
I think you hit on all of them.
Yeah. So what we require for certifications when we do them is 60 hours of practice to get certified at a technician level under an officially sanctioned master teacher. But you could possibly mess somebody up with this. It's hard. The main things are kind of overdosing people, training them for too long. Conventional neurofeedback usually takes a 20-minute or even a 40-minute session. Lens sessions can be over in 5 minutes. We're doing something called HPN, High Performance Neurofeedback, NeuroGen now. Usually an average training session takes about a half an hour of training.
Friends, I'm aware of the time. It's almost 5:15. I'm wondering if our speaker has anything he wants to close with, or last question or comment.
I believe this session's poems. You, the number session two's poems from that you sent us. Did we pass? I think Carol, you said they're on the podium. Do you have them?
These were the poems that were handed out last night?
No. We handed out, there's one for each plenary, the way you gave them to me, right?
Did you put them on separate pages?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So I'm going to read you just the last line of this poem, and then I'm going to ask the audience to aum with me three more times, okay? And I want to see, yes? A quick question, of course. We don't want anybody.
I hope it's quick. It might not be quick. You can take it back if you want. I just was curious because you were talking about certification and because you do touching as well. So how do you keep, do you have a code of ethics, and how do you deal with boundaries with people that you're working with when there's not only emotional intimacy but physical intimacy as well?
Well, anybody in the licensable professions has to abide by a code of ethical conduct as that profession is practiced in their state. Okay. So did everybody hear the question? How do you deal with personal boundaries, intimacy, and stuff like that? Years ago, realizing that psychologists can get into big trouble by touching somebody, I got licensed as a minister so I could hug patients occasionally at the end of a session. But the easiest way to do it, if you're attaching electrodes to their heads, is to ask permission to touch. I tell them, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not an RN. My staff members are trained to do the same thing. May I have permission to attach these gizmos to your head? Or if we also use something called a photonic stimulator on the body. They don't have to take off their clothes for that or anything like that. So it's just really, we've never had, I do have, of course, malpractice insurance, and fortunately I've never used it. We just have a good relationship with our patients. And you abide by the rules of the profession. Okay, so I really, really appreciate your engagement with the questions that you have, and if you want to corner me in the cafeteria or something like that, I'm happy to answer any additional questions you might be left with as a result of this. And by the way, my two books here, they're both about, I'm told that they're both readily accessible in terms of readability and stuff like that. This one is 2006, it's mostly on the lens, and this one is 2012, and it's much more up-to-date and contemporary and talks about the use of QEEG maps. You can also go to our website at Stone Mountain Center. It's a website very much in renovation, like the campus of this college. But it's got a lot of good information on it. It's got the stories of the animals. It's got Michael Schacher. It's got our up-and-coming training conference for professionals or people who would like to be professionals in Freiburg, Maine this summer, July 12th to 14th. And you can read about that a little bit on the website. So in conclusion, I'd like to say, we leap with the Maasai. I'm alive, are you? We play with the pygmies, the kung racing round the fire. Pygmies and giants, they are singing, Aum. I'm alive, are you? Is this an early episode in talking?
Maybe you've been wanting to talk the whole time.
I'm sorry I'm talking over you, honey. So let us share this holy num. Sing aum. Sing num. Sing amen. So let's really soup it up this time, everybody. And do your own thing. We're going to aum three times. Take a nice deep belly breath. And again. Even nicer, and one more time. Thank you all so very much.